offer you this lesson from Unity of the Keys Spiritual Center. And so, a little girl named Sarah is lying on her tummy, surrounded by her crayons, intently drawing on a piece of paper. Her mother walks in the room, observes her for a moment, and then says, "Sarah, what are you drawing?" Without even pausing, she says, I'm drawing a picture of God." And her mom says, "Oh, sweetheart, no one knows what God looks like." And with great patience, Sarah says, "They will when I'm done." "I will when I'm done." But we're never done, are we? We are always seeking to draw that picture of God that we can understand, that we can feel a connection with, this yearning to know, to connect, to feel, to embrace. We're always seeking to know that and to understand it in our language, to draw a picture with the crayons in our minds. We've just completed the series of the three faces of God, where we've gotten to explore different aspects. And today we began a series of going back to basics. For the title of today's talk is God Is. It's Unity Principle Number One. We speak it every single week. There is one presence and one power, God the Good, omnipotent. And I like the children's version, which is simply, God is. That's easy to remember. God is. And so we look at this and we say, well, what is unity? Many of us have struggled with that when our friends ask us about unity. And we find ourselves sometimes answering more what unity is not than what it is. We'll go into that, well, we're Christian, but when it comes to the devil and sin, and we start to, trail off. And that really does a disservice to the beautiful and simplistic and powerful teachings that unity professes, that unity has. One of the questions that will come up that we do have to negate is unity Unitarian Universalist? We're always confused with that. And that answer would be no. And is unity Christian? And that answer would be yes, we are. We are Christian. We follow the teachings and the life of Jesus, our wayshower and our elder brother. That is our focus, unlike some of our brothers and sisters in Christianity whose focus is more on the crucifixion and the resurrection. We don't negate those things. That simply is not our focus. So again, we're developing a sophistication of, if that's not who we are, then who are we? Not only for our ability to answer the question of others, but for our ability to know ourselves. What is unity? Well, the late Eric Butterworth, who's considered a legend and spiritual icon within the unity movement, he wrote 14 spiritual books. And the first book that he wrote was a little book called Unity, A Quest for Truth, over 50 years ago. And in this book, he says, unity, essentially, is a technique through which you can find answers for yourself in words that are meaningful to you. Well, for those of us in unity, we go, yeah, that sums it up. But for those outside of unity, that's still a little confusing. And sometimes you'll hear within unity that we have no creed, no doctrine, no dogma. That's not really true. For a creed is simply an I believe statement. I believe. I believe. I believe there is one presence and one power. I believe in God the good. Well, we have that, don't we? And doctrine is simply principle, position, or policy taught or advocated. today and the next few weeks, we're going to be talking about five basic unity principles. So we have that. Dogma. Doctrine authoritatively laid down or proclaimed as unquestionably true. And that's where we veer off, in that we don't insist anyone believes the way we believe. Unity is a beautiful container for people of all faiths to be able to explore and to not let go of, not release any of their former beliefs if they hold true for them, to embrace what works for them. And there's nothing authoritative about unity. So we do not have dogma. The five basic unity principles are taught in this little book by Ellen Davenport. This is a fairly new book. And in here she talks about the heritage of those five basic unity principles, because Myrtle and Charles Fillmore did not teach them in that way. You can find the unity principles within their teachings, but they were not summarized as being five. Now, as we get into these studies, I'm going to be sharing with you some of the wild things Charles did write down. But these five were really collectively put together, and no one is actually sure who did that. It may have been Catherine Robotham, Unity Minister, and one of the teachers out there. Most often, the credit goes to Connie Fillmore Bazzi, great-granddaughter of Myrtle and Charles Fillmore. When she was asked to summarize the beliefs for the Daily Word magazine, the article was later incorporated into a booklet, Keys to the Kingdom, published in 1990. 1990, 100 years after the beginning of unity. So God is. There's one presence and one power. God is. We hold that and go, well, yeah, everybody believes that pretty much, you know, that we know. That's pretty much what folks believe. Intellectually, that is very true. But in practice, that may not be as true. For in practice, our behavior, our actions reveal our beliefs, our fears, our doubts, that may not be in the one presence and the one power, for our world is full of dualism. There's night, there's day. There's dark, there's light. There's the sun, there's the moon, there's land, there's the sea. There's hot and cold. There's good and bad. There is good and bad. When I taste something, it either tastes good or it tastes bad. When I bring grades home from school, they were either good or they were bad. So good and bad exist in our world, in that we assign that. So it's easy to fall into the belief that there's God the good, then there must be devil the bad, right? Only within our minds. Only within our minds does that separation and duality exist in the spiritual realm. Of course, we cannot deny it on the physical realm. I'm so anxious to go to the Bible. I keep going there before it's time. Several years ago, a friend of mine asked me, so do you believe that Jesus will arise, reign, and judge harshly? I was taken aback by that question. That question was not asked of me so that I could defend my beliefs, although my ego wanted to go there. That question was not asked of me so I could show my friend that my belief was superior to hers. That question was asked of me so that I could go into my own mind, my own thoughts, and ask myself, where do I believe in separation? Where do I believe that I am being judged, that spirit judges, that God judges? Now, we might not go there with someone asking us a simple question, but we need to go there for ourselves, because all of life is a classroom. And so whether our discussion is with a friend, a total stranger, everything that comes up in us comes up for a reason. It comes up so that we identify it, we recognize it, we heal it, and we release it. All of life is a classroom. Now I will turn to Scripture. And we turn to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 5, 37, 38, for guidance on this subject. We've looked at the Scripture before. We'll look at it again. It is so rich. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the new wine will burst the skins and will be spilled, and the skins will be destroyed. But new wine must be put into fresh wineskins. This is conveying to us that new beliefs, new powerful beliefs, new realizations that we have, new understandings cannot be poured into the container of our being while our being is still holding on to the vessel of old beliefs, of believing in lack and limitation and the world is unfair and no one can be trusted, and we judge, and we're being judged. As long as that container is there, we can keep pouring these ideas in. And they'll just splash out. They'll just crack that container. We hope it cracks that container, for we want our old beliefs to dissipate. But we have to do the work. We must do the work. In this scripture, Jesus is not only saying that our thoughts must change, but our behaviors must change. And he was warning the Israelites. He was giving the Israelites the message that they must hold true to their faith. For the Israelites were radical in their belief in one God. In one God. They were surrounded by cultures. All the other cultures, large and small, were a multi-godded culture. They believed in many gods. That was one of the reasons that the Israelites were seen with great suspicion, that they had this weird religion that only had one God. And so Jesus was saying to them, you cannot hold on to the worldview of one God and still cling to the multi-godded cultures. And that was difficult, for they were always being defeated and drug off to live somewhere else. They were always being scattered about. And then they would, you know, try to assimilate as best they could wherever they landed and get along with their neighbors and so participate with the rituals and the customs or where they were, so as not to offend. Let's put on our seatbelts now, as we're going to delve into where are we not revealing in the way that we live and move or have our being one presence and one power. Where are we clinging to a multi-godded culture? What or who are we giving power to besides the one presence and one power? Well, I mentioned one earlier, and that's the ego. We tend to see in our culture the ego as if it has some separate, independent power greater than ourselves. One presence and one power means one, not two, not three, one. And so we'll say things like, well, the ego, my ego wouldn't let me tell him that I love him. My ego wouldn't let me tell her she was right. Egos have created conflict and wars within families and cultures and countries for as long as we have existed. Our ego is simply a survival mechanism for us to direct, for us to determine how and where it's revealed. It's our ego that we give then power in our culture to youth and beauty. It's another couple of the gods that we have out there. Perhaps some of our gods are the economy or politics. You're giving your power away to those things, to money, to possessions, to our iPhone? Where are we creating gods in our life that negate the one presence and the one power? We say in unity that we are all perfect, beautiful children of God, and that is true. That is absolutely true in the absolute. We are also a work in progress. I feel like we should have t-shirts made that say, be gentle with me, I'm work in progress. We are each unique and beautiful works in progress. For that is our work, to find where our day-to-day life, our day-to-day beliefs, our day-to-day behaviors are not aligned with the truth that we accept intellectually and that we occasionally embrace in our hearts. How can we embrace it more fully? How can we express it more fully? A few years ago, Denny and I were talking about some bumper stickers that we thought might be appropriate for unity. So one of them was unity, not for the faint of heart. And then we thought about the third grade version, unity, not for scaredy cats. Because in unity, we don't get to come to church on Sunday morning, then check it off and go, done, complete, we're done with that. We learn that we have work to do. If you've taken classes from me, you know I call it love work instead of homework. Love work. For our work is to explore, where do I not fully believe what my heart is telling me? Where am I not fully expressing? We explore, we heal, we learn, and we grow. For we have the persistence, we have the dedication, and we have the commitment to the one presence and the one power. We are not scaredy cats. And so may unity, the one presence and the one power, be expressed in you and in me this week and every day, and especially on this gorgeous day here in Key West. God bless you.
This is Reverend Debrie Toms. If you felt spiritually fed by this lesson, please feel free to hit the Donate Now button. And if you are ever in our area here in Key West, please drop in. God bless you on your journey.